Hi, this is John Mosby, author of Fearful Symmetry, the essential guide to all things Highlander. Please join us for the gathering, the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention in Los Angeles in October 20th through the 22nd.
Hi, everybody. This is Carmel McPherson, President of Highlander Worldwide. Please join us for the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention, the gathering in Los Angeles, California, October 20th to the 22nd. You're listening to Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Episode 43 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we discuss all things Highlander, including the movies, the TV series, the novels, audiobooks, the games, occasional guest interviews, special events, and another look at the Highlander animated series, and more. I'm Kevin, one of your Blood of Kings hosts. However, I never do this alone, and I need my fellow immortal brother and fellow Highlander aficionado. With me is my co-host Norman. Welcome, Norm!
Eternal power to Cortan. Eternal power to Cortan.
Power to Cortan. Eternal power to Cortan. Cortan.
Hi, Kevin.
Oh, I thought I was out, and they drug me back in. Thanks, Norm.
I told you that we were going to do another show like this, because who knew that it would have been such a popular show for us when we first released this several episodes ago.
You know, you're right. And, you know, I have to eat a little crow there. I wasn't expecting it to be as popular, but no one else did it before.
That's right.
And it's one of those Highlander things that it's kind of out there, and fans are kind of like, you know, I know it exists, but I don't think I should care about it. But we're making you care about it. And it was a hit, our episode. And I said in that episode, if there's a demand for it, we'll do it again. And here we are doing it again. But here's the interesting thing though, Norm, and we're going to tease this right now.
Yes.
We're talking about, the Highlander animated series, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And, we were going to do four episodes, the next four episodes that after the last four that we did, right?
Right.
But as you'd been writing the notes and then I was writing my other notes and we kind of came together, I noticed that there was an episode you didn't cover, you missed.
Right.
And then you're like, well, no. You missed an episode. And I was like, well, no, you missed an episode.
And I was like, well, no, well, you missed an episode. And like, yeah.
Well, we'll get into it a little bit more later, but we're actually going to be covering five episodes for this reason. Mm-hmm. and we'll tell you what happened and why. But before we get into all that, Norm, let's catch up and let's go somewhere where we're comfortable. We have our own table. We have a bill that is probably getting bigger and bigger by the week. A tab that we have not cleared yet.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you say? We head on over to Joe's.
Eternal power to Joe's. Eternal
power
to
Joe's. Well, I'm thinking that Joe probably doesn't appreciate any chants like that inside. He sounds good over there on the guitar, as usual. But I think he wants us to kind of be quiet, maybe.
You know, I asked Joe, I go, have you ever heard of an immortal named Cortan? He goes, that's the stupidest name I've ever heard of in my entire life. There's not any of my records. I don't know what you're talking about. But he goes, but wait a second. You may have watched an episode that I didn't watch. So I don't know. Maybe there's a theme going on here.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Before I thought we move in, I just want to let people know how they can contact us here at Blood of Kings. You can find us on the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for Android users, and also check out the Podbean app. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network there, which you will find the Blood of Kings feed. Instagram, we are at Fandom Podcast Network and Blood of Kings Pod. And of course, our Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group is on Facebook. And our sister page, Blood of Kings Highlander CCG, the collectible card game. It's getting a lot more old players from playing the game coming and visiting that page. Welcome, Bill Chen.
I know. Okay, so when Mike and I started playing the game, this guy was legend. I'm telling you, man. Bill Chen was legend. There were a handful of players that you really wanted to beat. He was nigh impossible. I'm not even sure if he was beaten.
Well, I remember him from the Star Trek CCG card game days, and
okay.
He was legend there as well. So, yeah.
All right.
You can email us at bloodykingspodcast@gmail.com, and on Twitter, you can find us at bloodykingspod. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norm, where can we find you?
You can find me at Starfighter1701.
And, of course, Mike is on Twitter at Immortal Chimoli. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes, please. We'd love more reviews. We'll praise you here on Blood of Kings, and really, really appreciate that. So please do that.
Here's an example of a really good five-star review. Five-star review from Malone. Eternal power to Cortan. That's all you have to say.
I know, right?
And I think Malone was kind of, he was kind of butt-kissing a little bit, but that's kind of like what Malone does. But we'll take that kind of a review.
Malone, the Cortan jester that wears bells on his arms.
And a white carrot nose. But still, well-reviewed.
Yes, exactly. We wanted to remind people of the Sword Experience, as we always do. Please check out theswordexperience.com. Coming up, we have June 18th in Dallas, Flower Mound, Texas. June 24th is in Knoxville. And, of course, don't forget the Euro Tour that Carmel McPherson of Highlander Worldwide is helping organize. You can contact her at highlandertours1592@gmail.com. And those include, in the month of July, we've got Ireland, Scotland, England, and France. And then Adrian will be back October 20th, of course, for the Highlander Worldwide Gathering Convention. October 28th, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. November 10th in Providence, Rhode Island. And speaking of the Highlander 20th Anniversary Convention, Norm and I will be there. The dates are Friday, October 20th through Sunday, October 22nd at the Crown Plaza near the Los Angeles International Airport. Please check out HighlanderWorldwide.com for more information and ticket and ticket packages. Confirmed guests, of course, are Adrian Paul, Elizabeth Grayson, Jim Burns, F. Bronimick Ash, David Abramowitz, and Anthony DeLongis.
Can I make
and
one
more to come?
Can I make one addendum to that?
Oh, please do.
Because those are the official dates for the Highlander Convention, but you and I are going to be there earlier because we're going to have our Blood of Kings, and I call it the meet up and greet up and eat up, because we want to meet all of our fans on the night before, if you're going to be there, and we would love to get together with you and just kind of shake your hands, thank you, have a couple of, I don't know, what are you going to have? Something with cheese related?
Yeah, probably. So yeah, we're looking at doing it probably in the hotel, hotel restaurant lobby, somewhere right in there, so it's convenient for everyone. And that's the Thursday night before. That's going to be holy ground, right?
That is.
No heads taken?
That's totally going to be holy ground, yeah. But as you know, holy ground doesn't matter, so you never know what's going to happen.
I wanted to... sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just kidding.
Holy ground.
Soreness. I'm such a spoil sport.
I wanted to mention a post by John Mosby. On May, I think he did it, late in May here. He says, we're nearly into June, and it's less than 5 months to the gathering convention. Carmel is currently in L.A. working out the best layout, floor plans, and further details with the hotel and helping us get a better idea of how parts of the convention will work alongside others. Classes with the likes of Adrian, Braun, Anthony, etc. are being scheduled for Friday, but there's another 2 days of activities. We have our own ideas and plans, of course, based on what has been the most popular over the years at our previous weekends. But we want to know what you, the attendees, are most looking forward to this convention. Much of our weekend will be devoted to the landmark 25th anniversary of the series, but that gives us a lot of latitude, especially with our expansive guest lineup. and we'll be announcing some more names to that shortly. So what do you want to see and discuss? Give us your ideas on the Highlander Worldwide Gathering Facebook page or contact us individually. Norm, what do you have to say about that?
From what you and Kevin and Aaron and everyone who went to the...
You mean Kyle?
Kyle. When you guys were there at the 30th anniversary convention, or anyone who was there at the 30th anniversary convention, you all just absolutely raved over Elizabeth Grayson's love letters.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we can, start a petition or if we email her or what, but I would really like for that, even if it's a continuation of her love letters, I would really for that to be performed at this convention. I think it's the right place to do it.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect place. I think it will be much more crowded, more captive audience. And I also would love to see it filmed, maybe, done so it can be released later, or at least, something that we can walk away with it and see it later on YouTube or something like that. Because, I know there was a camera there that was being filmed officially, but I don't know how well it recorded it. And I would love to see some stills from that event, because being able to listen to that again, or if you don't get a chance to make it, fans would love to see this.
I know that in the past, Highlander Worldwide, which is the parent company that's sponsoring this convention, they have released convention footage in the past on DVD. So perhaps because this is such a monumental anniversary convention, that may be the case, but it really all depends on the rights releases that they work out with their celebrities. So,
all right, cool. Well, before we head on out of Joe's, Norm, I thought that we would dive into that little immortal challenge that you love so much.
I do. Bring it on. I'm going to get this one. If I don't, I don't.
Okay.
So that's the truth.
Right. Now, this one might be a little bit tough, but I'm going to give you a clue. It's from season 5.
Ooh, okay.
From season 5, okay?
I'm pretty good with season 5. That's the Raven season, right?
No, season 6 was.
Or is it season 5.5?
Yeah, there you go. All right. This immortal was an immortal whose real name, age, and origin are unknown.
Great.
He presented himself as Mythos for a long time, that the Watchers simply called him the Other Mythos.
Mm.
He preached peace and rejection of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The Immortal was in Seacouver, where he met Immortal Richie Ryan. Richie drew his sword, but the Immortal did not, and told Richie that he wanted to talk about peace. The Immortal told Richie that he had stopped taking heads a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
He then asked what it would be like if the other mortals could end the game, and if immortals could live in peace. When Richie asked him who he is, he says that his name is Mythos.
Right.
Quote, "You can take my head, or you can think about what I said." Richie soon took this immortal's words of peace to heart, to the point that the next day he interrupted a fight between Duncan MacLeod and William
Colbraith. Oh.
Duncan was furious, then stunned when Richie told him that the immortal who called himself Mythos. Who is this immortal?
His name or the actor's name?
Let's start with the actor.
Okay, the actor's name is Ron Perlman.
Yeah, buddy. Nice.
And I don't know what his immortal name was, but I do know it was Ron Perlman.
Do you remember the episode?
I remembered William Colbraith, and I remembered this guy. No, not really. I don't remember this episode well.
Well, the name of the episode is also...
Oh.
The name of the immortal.
The messenger?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
Correct. He was never given a proper name, but he was deceased by William Colbraith.
Right.
And his occupation was traveler and peacemaker.
I remember when Mythos actually came on the scene, and Richie was talking about it. I think he was at Joe's Bar, and he goes, "Yeah, I met Mythos today, and Adam Pearson was there." Because I don't think that... Joe, I'm going to Joe. Joe, am I getting this right? Yeah, he's giving me the thumbs up. Because he said that Richie walked in and he goes, "I had the most amazing experience today. I met the immortal Mythos." And Adam Pearson was having a beer there. And he goes, "Oh, really?"
Say what? Yeah. Well, what I really liked about this this character was what he, how he, and this is something I've brought up in the past about immortals in the game and all that kind of stuff. And I like it when immortals challenge the game. Mm-hmm. And about living in peace and why should they fight to the last one. And I love the fact that this character touched on that. And makes me want to watch this episode again.
It was neat seeing Ron Perlman in there, because Ron Perlman, he kind of, he straddles that line between a really good movie presence and a really good TV presence. And we all know Ron Perlman from as being Hellboy. I think that's probably his most signature role. But he was in movies.
Also, for you Sons of Anarchy fans out there, he had a long role on Sons of Anarchy, and he was awesome.
Right. And then he can go, he can get traced back all the way to the 80s, for Quest for Fire. I remember that. Yeah, he just has so many different roles. He kind of falls within that Powers Booth category. I mentioned Powers
Alien
Booth.
4, Alien Resurrection. 4, Resurrection. Right. I remember he was in Drive. Mm-hmm. And he's just been in a lot of great stuff. Of course, Beauty and the Beast.
Right. Exactly. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and I wanted to show Ron Perlman some love, so that's why I threw that one at you.
Straight up. That was fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, first of all, before we leave, you drink anything special?
I am actually drinking something that you can pronounce.
Yeah, what's that?
From the great state of Wyoming. It's called Wyoming whiskey.
All right. I can pronounce that. That does sound real. Mm-hmm. So I discovered something at Wendy's the other day, and I know that Seacouver has a Wendy's. Mm-hmm. You know those new fancy Coke machines that are touch screen and you can add all the different flavors to it? Usually they're found mostly like AMC theaters.
Yeah, they're movie theaters, right?
Yeah, well, Wendy's has this thing. It's had it for a while. But what's really cool is they have their own what's the name of the guy that owns Wendy's? What's his name?
Dave,
yes. Yeah. Dave has his own version of a cream soda.
Ooh.
And there's a diet version too, and there's a little icon that you can click on it, and instead of getting your Diet Coke or your Coke products in different flavors, you can get that special cream soda. Mm. And oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I love cream sodas. Yeah.
So I say let's stop at Wendy's out of Joe's before we head on over and continue the show. And let's let Joe finish up playing and let's get out of here.
Here's my favorite thing at Wendy's. It's something that you don't know. I love the fries and I love taking the hot chili oil and drizzling it over my fries.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Right?
I'm hungry.
All right.
All right, Joe. All right, Joe's, we're taking off. Let's go. All right, Norm, here we are back talking about Quentin McCloud. The adventure continues, as we promised that we would do if the demand and the interest peaked, we would do and visit this animated series again, much to my chagrin. But hey, I do it for the fans. I do it for you.
Thank you.
And it was interesting diving into this again, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But we need to talk about why we're doing covering five episodes today instead of four. So we were combining our notes and I noticed that you had put the list of the notes of the episodes that we were scheduled to do. It was supposed to be the next four that were following the previous first four that we did. And there was an episode you had up there that I didn't recognize, nor did I watch. And I said, Norm, I sent you a message saying you went out of order here. You missed an episode. You forgot about this one. You're like, no, I didn't. What would you say?
Well, I said, I put in my disc and I said, you know what? The last episode that we did on a previous episode of Blood of Kings was, I think it was called The Last Weapon. And it was about the machine gun. And then I just took the next four episodes from there and I went right in order, and then I made my notes and then I put those in order, and then you watched yours, and then you were going to put your notes in there, then you PM'd me today and you said you missed an episode. I'm like, I don't think so. I didn't switch out discs. And lo and behold, you sent me a picture of your DVD set, and then I sent you a picture of my DVD set, and unbeknownst to us, these are two completely different DVD sets that we're working from. And we don't like doing this because we like doing an apples to apples, oranges to oranges comparison. So that was something that was really interesting to us. And it's something that I think the fans need to know, that there are actually, as far as we're concerned, to our knowledge, two different DVD production sets of Highlander, the animated series.
Now, before we tell you, you know, the differences between them, we did want to mention that The set that I have, it was the one that came out in 2007, and that is, and it says here that the package design 2007 was done by Genius Products, but yours was done by a different company, correct? Or had a different date?
My DVD package design is copyright 2009, Image Entertainment. Now, isn't it interesting that there's a copyright for DVD package design?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So this, we're like, okay, well, what is the right order? Does one actually do the episode air date? You know, what happened here? So it, what it looks like, and we looked on IMDb as well, it looks like the one that you have, Norm, actually fits in line with, according to IMDb anyway, mm-hmm. the actual aired order that they came in. And so we did the first four, the last episode when we covered the animated series. We did Last of the McClouds, A Taste of Betrayal, The Last Weapon, and Melvin the Magnificent. And then the next one is The Sound of Madness, mm-hmm. which was the one that was not in order for me. It was on disc two, like episode three. And I went straight to the next episode, which is The Suspended Village, Exodus, History Lesson, and then The Cursed, which was the one that I ended up covering that you did not because you thought you were done with the History Lesson episode.
Right.
So to clarify, we're going to cover The Sound of Madness, Suspended Village, Exodus, The History Lesson, and Cursed. And those all aired one after the other after the first four did.
Okay.
So it looks like you have an updated, corrected version of how they were actually aired.
Okay. And your packaging is a slipcase of two different DVD boxes, right? So each one of yours is one of those kind of DVD boxes that when you open it up, it has the hinged insert where you have two yep. different discs, right? And then you have two yep. of those inside an actual slipcase.
Yep.
Which is
it's two DVDs inside a slipcase, right. But yours is a little bit different.
Yeah, it's mine's just a regular clamshell with the DVDs stacked one on top of the other. So it's thinner, it's in translucent plastic. It's more of kind of a stripped down economic way of when how DVDs are packaged now. Kevin's is a little bit more kind of like the collector's, very nice, very robust packaging. It's something that's really nice and sits well on a shelf. But because of production value and because they want to make money off the license and not necessarily lose money on the packaging, this is what happens. But here's the interesting thing, Kevin. I thought that it would just be a change in packaging, like skinnying down your packaging to mine, but actually the DVD menus are also different. Your graphics yes. on your DVD menus are different than my graphics. So somewhere along the line, when these packages got switched, they did a little bit more of an enhanced production. And here's the other interesting thing. And it's something I think that we take great pride in, Kevin.
Yes. Okay, so we were like, did we miss something? Where should we go to find out that answer first? We went to John Mosby's book, Fearful Symmetry. Mm-hmm. Well, this DVD difference was not in it. So, this is breaking news.
This is breaking news.
A few years late, but yeah. So, we just, you know, we're having a little fun on John Mosby's part here. But yeah, it wasn't in his book that these differences were released at two different times, at two different DVD cases, and different menus and different episode order. So there you go.
I think that's the first time that you and I have actually reviewed something in hard media that has been this different.
Yeah, definitely.
So now I have to buy a completely different new set to collect all things Highlander.
Now I got to buy your set. Darn it.
Unless, like you said, unless they took one of your sets or one of my sets and buried them along with like the fabled E.T. Atari cassette tape somewhere in a landfill
exactly.
in the Bermuda Triangle or something.
Which probably would have been mine because it's the one that's out of order. But yours takes up a little bit less space on your DVD case.
Sure does.
Mine's thicker,
but,
right?
But yours is nicer looking. Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably worth like, you know, $1,500.
At least.
Well, anyway, so we wanted to clarify that, let you guys know what we discovered. And moving forward, we thought we would give a little breakdown of the world that is the Highlander animated series. Norm, why don't you go ahead and kick this off here?
So just to refresh everybody from my previous podcast, when we first covered the animated series, the animated series follows the adventures of Quentin MacLeod, the last of the MacLeods, and kind of like the MacLeod Messiah. It's set in this post-apocalyptic world that's 700 years from our own timeline, and it's kind of like Highlander meets Thundar the Barbarian. You know, there's no technology. There are pockets of civilization. And the most important thing is that there are a handful of immortals left, and they call them the Jeditors. And the Jeditors sounds very much like jettison, or to throw away. They have thrown away their warlike nature in order to create a new future for mankind. They've laid down their swords, and they've taken this oath so that they can preserve what is left for humanity. Well, one viciously evil immortal, Kortan, decided not to take that oath, and he has broken away from the Jeditors. So he's kind of like this evil power that is reigning over the land, and definitely his own empire called Maganda. And as far as we know, we think that the series was, or we know now that the series was created before Highlander Endgame, because Kortan, in the one of the episodes that I covered that wasn't part of your original order, Kevin, is very pivotal to this story. It's about Kortan and Connor McCloud, Connor McCloud being one of the Jeditors, and the fate of Connor McCloud. I don't want to go into that too much because we'll go into that in the episode breakdown. And the animation itself, it's not the greatest animation in the world, but I kind of understand where Gaumont Television was going with this. They wanted to create kind of a family-friendly, child-friendly, age-appropriate. When I say age-appropriate, probably around the ages of like 9 to 12, somewhere along that line, something that can they can reap the rewards off of the Highlander franchise itself. So that's where we are in the animation.
Yeah, it's. I remember I made some comments about the choice of costumes that these characters were wearing. But going over that this time, though, I was able to look past that and kind of get more into the stories. And one thing that I liked about the stories that the episodes that we're covering now is that there's a little bit more world building. Mm-hmm. And you see what's happening with our main character, Quentin McCloud. And I thought we would touch on the main characters, refresh the listeners' memories of who we are rooting for and who the bad guys are and such. We have, of course, Quentin McCloud. He is the main character of the series. He's raised by the Dundee clan, and he was killed by Eric, and then he was resurrected as an immortal. When Kortan sought to capture the Dundee, usually fights with a sword that belongs to Connor McCloud, but also carries a boomerang that he's quite skilled with. Then we have the Ramirez character, Don Vicente Marino Ramirez, the Jeditor tasked with guiding Quentin and making sure that the other Jeditors keep the oath. He trains Quentin in the art of combat as well as philosophy and some history. Many episodes feature flashbacks of his life. Of course, now we have the evil bad guy, Kortan, one of the only three immortals not to take the oath, declared himself the winner of the game and took control of the earth. Rules from his city fortress of Maganda. We have Eric, A-R-A-K, one of Kortan's generals, leader of the Kortan's army, the Hunters, mortally wounded Quentin's adopted mother and killed Quentin, triggering his immortality. His left eye and hand are cybernetic. Then we have Malone, Quentin's shirtless jester sidekick with a puppet-like long nose, white glam hair and bells on his arms, and I joked last time that he could be the only male member of the band Gem in the holograms.
Yeah.
Then we have the sidekick, Clyde, a girl, Quentin's adoptive younger sister. Though raised as his blood relative, she often ends up in danger during missions, but on occasion serves as a distraction. Then we have Gall, Clyde's pet Gran, a hybrid of ape and canine. Like all Grans, Gall is highly intelligent and is very protective of both Clyde and Quentin. His animal sense sometimes helps Quentin in dangerous situations. So there is a quick lowdown of the main characters again. And one thing I wanted to make sure was that there's always reference to the big catastrophe. We're not sure exactly what it is that basically destroyed the earth and kind of reset it, and therefore produced not just more humans, but also produced different creatures that we're not used to seeing. We don't see horses anymore. We see these other beasts of burdens and other like lizard-type creatures. So all the creatures and the beasts of burdens are different because of whatever sprang up after this big catastrophe that pretty much destroyed Earth and then kind of reset it into its new world 700 years later. Mm-hmm. Norm, this is the episode that I missed at first, but I did get a chance to watch it. Go ahead and hit us up with episode 5, The Sound of Madness.
So the synopsis is Cortan catches Malone dressed in Cortan's cape and goofing around in Cortan's throne room. Asclepios is kind of one of the scientist characters, background characters, and not very important, but that's just who he is, determines the location of a cloud, and Cortan makes plans to challenge Quentin on the remains of a rusted ship in the desert. A flashback shows the death of Connor McCloud at Cortan's hand during the Jettator ceremony. This is when they all take the oath. And just to sidetrack a little bit, you said Cortan was one of three immortals that didn't take the oath. Cortan didn't take the oath. Connor didn't take the oath. And we still have yet to...
Ramirez?
No, Ramirez took the oath and is enforcing everyone else who took the oath. So
okay, so there's still someone else then that we'll probably learn about later, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
So the flashback shows the death of Connor McCloud, which is kind of a huge thing, right, in Highlander?
Yes. Yes, it is. And this was in 1994, before the 2000 release of Highlander Endgame.
Yeah, so that's a big deal. The death of Connor McCloud at Cortan's hand during the Jettator ceremony. In the present, Quentin is temporarily blinded during the fight and between he and Cortan, and then both duelists are struck by lightning, sending Quentin into the ship. Ramirez finds Quentin and knocks him out. That was funny. Whack! Shut up, Quentin. Lest he continue the fight. When he revives, the blind Highlander goes for Maganda. Cortan exits the city gates, or we think, in a tank to fight him. He sends Malone out in disguise and then attacks Quentin from behind. That sneaky blah, blah, blah. Quentin's eyesight returns, but he finds himself on his back when Cortan's blade is his neck, and Cortan finds Ramirez's blade at his neck. Cortan chooses to enter the tank and escape, leaving Malone to chase behind him.
I'm really glad you... okay, so when I was doing the notes for an episode later on, mm-hmm. the character of Asclepios,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how you came up with that spelling, but mine was completely different because I had to kind of rewind some of the characters' names, like, what did they say, and kind of make a best guess and write up the notes.
I think we just have to do it all phonetically because I didn't have any subtitles in my DVD set.
Neither did
I. Okay,
neither
so no closed captioning on these DVD sets.
No,
okay.
No, nothing. So I like your spelling better than I like.
Well, just a side note, a lot of these names are Greek in origin or in some type of phonetical spelling. So I don't know why, but you know, some are Greek, very Greek, and some are very French. So, hey, you know, we're dealing with a European production. Who knows?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. So I thought this was a really interesting episode. I kind of like side titled this instead of Highlander. I called it Blindlender.
You love doing that.
I do. And there's kind of a pattern that's being established here where Ramirez and Quentin are training and then something happens and then Ramirez says, oh, this is a historical move of such and such importance. And then Quentin's like, you're so hard on me. And why are you being so hard on me? And why are you training me thusly? And then all of a sudden, Quentin goes out and rushes to go attack Cortan because Cortan is evil and destroy the Dundee clan. And then something happens and then it allows Quentin to use that specific maneuver. And then all of a sudden, Quentin's like, oh, Ramirez really isn't a jerk. He's just being hard on me because he's training me to become greater. And that's kind of where we're at with this episode. And there's this whole kind of Luke and Obi-Wan thing because Ramirez said, don't use your eyes. Your eyes will deceive you. Doesn't that sound familiar? With a blast shield down, I can't even see. How am I supposed to fight?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, what's interesting about this episode, and this is the one that I missed because it was not in the proper order, this is important because it establishes the, you don't see it directly, but we both agree that you see the death of Connor McCloud mm-hmm. and the mention of a sword. And that's important because that is mentioned in the later episodes that we're going to cover here.
Right.
So I'm glad I went back and read your notes and then also watched this episode. So, so this is important. This tells you the history of what happened with Connor during that Jettator ceremony with Cortan and also his sword.
The Sword of the McLeods, yes. And then,
yeah.
So Connor McLeod was supposed to be the champion, but Connor McLeod laid down his life or challenged Cortan, or we're not really sure. It's a little vague what happened because we didn't actually see what happened in that violence because this is a children's show. But one thing is for certain, Connor McLeod perished in that scene. Ramirez saved the sword for the eventual second coming of the McLeod or the Highlander, because it's not a McLeod necessarily, that they were waiting for the Highlander, yeah. Right? The Highlander is kind of like a this title of this Messiah character that's supposed to come and receive all the quickenings that are left from the Jettators in order to further mankind.
So there was, okay, so we have the flashback, but let's talk about the alternate reality canon in contrast to Endgame here. So we have the death of Connor here in 1994 in the animated series, taking 700 years later in the future after the catastrophe. Then we have Endgame, which rewrote history here. And now, what's your take on that? Is that because the animated series, because of the Highlander brain trust, I guess you could say, figured, you know, that was just a kid's TV show. That's not really what our canon should follow. Did they forget this completely? Did they not care? Did they try to just bury it because it didn't do as well as they wanted, even though they did 40 episodes? What's your take on this?
I think that the Highlander animated series is its own reality, and that the live action movies and TV show are their own reality.
It's like comparing it to the Kelvin line.
That's right. It's
Kelvin timeline in Star Trek.
Or the multiverse in the DC universe.
Okay.
So one of those things, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but here's one of those things where canon is a really dangerous tool in fandom, because if you are going to take the animated series and place it into canon, it's just going to twist you into knots. It really is. You know, because you have Don Vicente Marino Ramirez, who's supposed to be a relation to, you know, Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, which is, you know, the Sean Connery character. It's you can't force the comparisons to fit the square, you know, the square opening for the round peg. You just can't do it in this,
right,
you know.
Right.
So, and you know what? For the audience that this was created for, they don't care.
This is true.
They live in the canon of this animated series solely because no parent, I'm not going to say no parent, that's too much of an absolute, but most parents will not expose their children to a violent film or TV show like Highlander.
Well, I had to ask the question because I know our listeners are doing it.
Yeah.
So yeah. You know, but you're right.
In my opinion, these are two separate camps. They share similarities just because it's the Highlander property.
You mentioned a couple of notes on this episode, too. Zippo lighter, still a force to be reckoned with in the future.
Heck yeah!
This is something interesting, too. The Jettator gems, the animated version of the Immortal Buzz. Are you saying that they change color or do something?
They flash.
They flash?
Yeah.
Okay, because we will touch on it later, but there's also a buzz, too, that we get. But you're saying they flash when other immortals are around. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I know what you're talking about, and that's also another thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. And then Malone and Corton, are they breaking the one versus the one rule in this universe of Highlander?
I know I'm way overthinking that particular thing, but Malone dresses up as Cortan to draw Quentin out. And then as soon as Quentin confronts who he thinks is Cortan, Malone's like, it's not Cortan, it's me. And then Quentin's like, oh gosh darn it, I've been fooled. And then Cortan puts his blade up to Quentin's neck, and then Ramirez puts his blade up to Cortan's neck, you know. It's like, you know, it's like that gun scene usually in, you know, in movies. It's like click, I got you. No, click, I got you.
That kind of reminded me of John Woo films.
Exactly.
Sort of.
You know, how it goes, who's gonna fire first? So it's just one of those things where I'm like, oh, 2-on-1, and even in the Highlander universe, and they abuse that. Okay, sure.
All right, so we got episode 6 called The Suspended Village. You want me to read this one?
Nope, go for it.
Okay, cool. Episode 6, A Suspended Village. Synopsis. Ramirez is trying to teach McLeod how to conquer his fear of heights. Meanwhile, Eric and another hunter, Major Gorth, are fighting over slavery procedures. The conflict is brought to Corton's attention, and the court jester Malone suggests that the decision be made by a slave duel to the death. Eric goes to the village of Suspended Bridges and captures the son of the man who he wants to serve as his slave warrior. Quentin's fear of heights results in the father being injured, which makes the Jedidor Olok very wary about giving his quickening to the young Highlander. Ashamed of himself, Quentin goes to Moganda to take the man's place, and Ramirez has to follow him to make sure that he does not end up losing his head for his foolhardiness. Ramirez, Quentin, and the captive son escape, and an impressed Olok transfers his quickening to Quentin and then rejoices in the gift of mortality as Quentin leaves to continue his quest. I want to mention something straight up here, that we are seeing a trend of a different type of quickening that we have not seen before. Mm-hmm. And we'll touch on this more, but this obviously is to curtail the violence in this cartoon as well. Instead of cutting heads, you have this peaceful transfer of knowledge. I like to call the knowledge quickening that Quentin is receiving from these other immortals willingly. They're willing to give it up to the person here that is the chosen one, so to speak, so that they can give this information up, their knowledge, to transfer it to this person so then they can leave the life of immortality to become mortal.
Right. And that's a new thing. And I think that's really interesting. This is where, when I was watching the episode, I'm like, okay, I like that. That's kind of new. Because Olok did not just want to give his quickening immediately. He didn't think that Quentin was ready. Quentin struggled a lot with controlling his fear of heights. And then Olok was like, I'm not sure if he's ready. You know, the boy is not ready. You know, very much kind of like what Yoda was doing with Obi-Wan, you know. And
right.
So there's a lot of kind of the mentors versus the students. And then, you know, Quentin, you know, he proves his quality by walking into danger and saving the boy who was going to be sacrificed in this gladiatorial fight and bringing him back to the fold. So Olok says, you know what? He has shown great maturity. He has shown great promise. And then, yeah, that quickening is more like, okay, here's what I've been saving for you, and I've been waiting all this time, 700 years for you to arrive. Here it is, and now I can live my life peacefully, or hopefully.
Yeah, and we're seeing the path that Quentin is taking here while Ramirez is guiding him. And Ramirez also knows who all of these Jedidor immortals are and their specialities as well. And we're going to touch on more of that in the next couple episodes. Right. But it looks like that through his training, Quentin is trying to prove himself and his worth. And when he reaches a certain level, then Ramirez guides him towards the next Jedidor. It's plain and simple. That's what we're seeing right now.
It's almost like they know like the next stage of where he needs to go. And then Ramirez kind of trains him. It's like, okay, we're going to go to Ohio. I'm just using this.
It's like he's leveling up in a video.
Exactly.
Game.
You know, it's like, you know, we're in Illinois and we're going to train until we get to Ohio, because in Ohio, there's going to be this immortal that's supposed to teach you the power of this. But until then, we're going to train so you can prove to this immortal that you can receive his quickening, because he's been waiting a long time for you. And don't embarrass me, because you're supposed to be my student and the messiah of all the immortals and the true Highlander. So please, whatever you do, don't be a jerk.
And in your notes, and I want to read your notes word for word here, Olok's quickening. The first time we have seen a quickening in the animated series, and it's done in a peaceful ceremony where each Jedidor will eventually gift their essence to Quentin when he earns the right, and then, like Olok, will become mortal and finally living out a peaceful life. In this universe, immortals freely give of their essence and not by a beheading because of the oath. Mm-hmm. Do you think then the oath is what kind of changed the rules?
Yes, absolutely. And okay. I think that's a really cool thing. I know this is a cartoon. I mean, that's not lost on me. That's not lost on you. That's not lost on our listeners. But the idea is interesting, that yeah. The Earth has been ravaged so badly, either by some type of apocalyptic war or something that has basically returned the Earth to the Stone Age. lose, you know, what?
Have we seen anything that is made reference to Holy Ground?
Not yet. And I was thinking that too.
Okay. Right? There, okay. Like,
there could have been a fight between two immortals, and this is the result. The Earth got pretty much reset. But I think it was neat that all the immortals that were left, and some of them may have been evil, or at least may have been chaotic good, they decided to lay down their swords in order to survive until the next Highlander came and gift them their knowledge, instead of battling each other for no reason. Because you know what? It was so bad. The catastrophe was so bad. They were like, you know what? I can't even like put my own needs over what just happened to the Earth. We need to do something about this, or all is lost. So it's kind of like this interesting noble thing. Imagine this. Imagine if like immortals, like it's kind of like a gathering. Amon Fazil, Young Dolkhim, Asta Vasilik, the Kurgan, Castagir, and Connor. They were the Jeditors, right? And they all laid down their swords because something catastrophic happened to the Earth. Even someone as evil as the Kurgans is like, yeah, you know what? I'm evil. I know that. But this has got to stop because we got to do something better.
One thing I wanted to mention too, because I want to before we move on to the next episode, you mentioned some cool design work in this episode, and I wanted to mention something as well. Is I know I've teased the way some of these costumes look, but there are some things that I do like. For example, the hunters look really cool. I remember you ended up purchasing one of those toys, but I remember I was going through an old record store last week, and they had old records, they had old laser discs, they had old CDs, but they also had an old collection of heavy metal magazines. You remember Heavy Metal Magazine?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Came out in 1976, 77. It was the Adult Illustrated Fantasy Magazine. Mm-hmm. So obviously there was some imagery in there that, you know, showed some nudity, and they were, it was a great magazine for artists, fantasy artists, cartoon artists to really get their work out there and known. And there is some of this art in there that does kind of remind me of some of that art I saw in that magazine and also in the Heavy Metal movie. There's just, you know, a lot of it has to do with the post-apocalyptic look, and that we see remnants of old, you know, power lines and ships and stuff like that that hasn't been working for hundreds of years. So there's a little bit of that, but it does remind me of that a little bit, you know, that style. And I kind of like that. But you had mentioned specifically in this episode, you liked a couple of things here. You had Quentin's gladiator armor.
I thought that was neat. And who knew that underneath that green jumpsuit and overcoat that Quentin was jacked.
I know, right?
And jacked is colloquialism for really, really, really fit.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And then I thought that was cool. I thought this was really cool too. Ramirez's escape parachute.
Yeah, those were neat, you know, because we're talking about the power of the wind and, you know, it almost kind of like the kind of parachutes that you would go parasailing with. So they were just neat ideas. And like, okay, I haven't seen that before. That was kind of neat. It was goofy, but neat. Sure.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. It was kind of fun. Well, let's say we move on to episode 7 called Exodus. You go ahead and get this one here.
Okay. So Exodus. The synopsis is McCloud and Clyde and Ramirez, and they're all on the run from the hunters, and they arrive on an island with a drawbridge. The bridge is pulled up to prevent Arrak from pursuing, but he takes two hostages. The island is filled with women, since all the males were taken away as slaves. The islanders are experts in shipbuilding and have constructed a sailing ship with ample supplies for a journey to a new world outside of Cortan's reign. Meanwhile, one of the women tries to betray McCloud and Ramirez in exchange for the return of her family. Arrak falsely promises this until he is shown the entry hatch into the city and then imprisons her as well. Quentin saves the hostages as Ramirez seals the hatch. As the hunters try to get over the rusted and only half-lifted bridge, Quentin strikes at the chains to make the bridge fully close and then hurries to the ship as it begins to sail away. Now that is one serious sword, if you can do that to the kind of drawbridge chain needed to elevate a drawbridge of that size.
Yeah, yeah. I love the scene in this episode, too, where the women are showing Ramirez and Quentin the model ships of different sizes and varieties. There was even like a submarine, a sailing ship, and something more modern. Like someone had built these models and put them up and realized that these were ways that they could, you know, sail away. Little Enya snuck in there.
Well, singing happens. But singing always happens.
What's interesting, though, is that they have these ships here, but the problem is they don't know how to steer them. And then it's Ramirez who realizes that they need a rudder. And so he decides to help make the rudder while he asks Quentin to help thwart the plans of Arrak and his men. Now, you mentioned something in here that seems to be a Highlander animated series trope.
Oh, poor Clyde. When McCloud and Ramirez and Clyde and their Gaul, or their dog, when they were running from the hunters, they had to jump over a cliff into the water, and this water channel led them to this eventual bridge and island. Clyde got shot. Again!
Yeah, just like that weapon episode with the Browning machine gun. She got shot by that when Quentin got sick with power with a gun.
Yeah, so poor Clyde. You know, they used her. Not used her. That's the wrong word. But they needed to have her get medical attention. And they washed up on this island, almost kind of like a Paradise Island scenario, you know, like Themyscira, where the entire island is populated by women because their men were stolen. As for slavery, you know, by probably Iraq and then, you know, Shanghai'd off back to Maganda. So I thought this was a really interesting story because these women had to fend for themselves and they had to find a way to find a better life for themselves because where they were staying, they were going nowhere, right?
I got to be honest with you. I love the look, the background, the design of the ships in this episode. These are the type of things that reminded me of the Heavy Metal magazine and other things.
Oh, okay.
You know, some of the other character design. And you mentioned a cool scene here that I thought was a neat thing to mention here. You said where Teen shows Ramirez that the ancient art of ship build was not lost to men and preserved by women.
Yeah, that was the scene where... They said that we've created something that will take us away, and they will take us to this faraway land, far from Cortan's influence. They had these great maps, and they kind of showed like, you know, if we took this direction, that we would be far away from Maganda. And then Teen opened up this locker, and it had all those great models in there. And I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. You know, more interesting than I would probably have given this animated series credit for originally.
Yeah, yeah. And I know I'm going to forget this later, so I'm going to mention it now, and it might be in one of the upcoming episodes. But what we find out, and forgive me for jumping the gun on this information, is that Cortan took time or did whatever he had to do to basically erase people's memories of mankind's past so they would not use the knowledge of how to build things.
Right.
Weapons, whatever it is, so he can keep them under their thumb. Right. And I don't remember what episode I got that from, but I did want to mention that in case I forget it later.
Yes, the theme is that after this catastrophe, and it's probably why he didn't want to take the oath, is that he was able to rule over mankind because once you control information, then you control people. And once you control people, then you have your working army, you have your slaves, and you keep people in the dark. And it's almost the Jeditors. Their goal is to be the counterbalance of that. It's like, we need to educate people. We need to bring back these technologies because we were there when these happened. You know, Ramirez was there when planes, combustible engines, fuel, explosives, all that kind of stuff was, you know, that was ubiquitous in terms of society. But now, you know, what is this, you know, this liquid that catches on fire? This is a magic, you know, and, you know, thwarting tanks with explosives. How do you do that? That's sorcery. But in medieval times, they always said that sorcery was technology that could never be explained. These were just, you know, these were common tropes. And I thought that was neat. They were bringing that into here. And I also really thought it was cool that these women were stockpiling technology and agriculture and things that would provide them a better life once they got that ship in the water.
Speaking of, you called this the Noah's Ark meets Highlander. And you said that there's interesting detail, the life-size ship that was built to such exacting detail that it was even missing a rudder, as in the miniature scale model,
yeah,
which I thought was interesting. They built it just like the model, but the model was missing the rudder, and I didn't catch
they
it.
Built,
so I thought that
they
was
built
really cool.
It perfectly. To
yeah, but yeah. It was missing the important steering component. So yeah. Now you said that I missed this. There was an iron pipe sighting in this episode.
Yep. At the very beginning, Teen picks up an iron pipe when they washed up on shore, and she holds it to I think Ramirez's head. You know, he's like, you know, what are you doing here? You know, you're not allowed here. You're strangers. And then all of a sudden, you know, either Quentin says like, no, my sister's shot. She needs help. And she's like, oh, okay. You know, because anyone that was on the island is considered a stranger. I mean, if you're a stranger, you're working for Cortan or Eric because they were stealing their men. So they were very paranoid about any new people.
The other there's a couple other notes here I want you to touch on. It says, does Ramirez always arm Quentin with McLeod's sword? Has Quentin not earned the trust and right yet?
Yeah,
he's still training, man. He's still
exactly.
I think he's still afraid he's going to cut himself on that thing.
Yeah, he's like, okay, it's your time, and you have to thwart the bad guys. So I'm going to, you know, unfurl this McLeod sword from its silk scabbard and go take care of that giant chain that's holding up the drawbridge. So
now, there was a scene in this, I'm glad you mentioned this in the notes, that actually kind of bothered me. And it caught me by surprise because we don't see this anymore, and I don't remember seeing this in any other cartoons. You talked about the character of Hele's beating by Arrak.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Arrak. So Hele, she was kind of the traitor, but she felt like she had no way out. So she decided to swap the freedom of her husband and her son for Quentin and Ramirez, you know, for the prisoners. And then Arrak double crosses her, and then he starts to wail on her. And she, you know,
he hits her hard to where she falls off into the water.
Yeah,
I think, right?
He just kind of like he beats on her, and that's on camera. It's not a cutaway or it's not implied. I mean, you see this character, cartoon form, even so, beats on her, and that's something that you don't see a lot, I think, in animation nowadays, unless it's overseas or R-rated.
Yeah, that scene bothered me. It's just I don't know. It's interesting how they have a cartoon here and they won't show any type of beheading violence, but they can show this guy backhand her or whatever he did to
exactly.
her.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah, that bugged me. I didn't like that. But you did like the final escape scene. That was pretty cool.
I thought the tension was ramping up really nicely. And then, you know, obviously, you know, Quentin was trying to deal with the drawbridge. And I thought it was neat that you had those tanks that were trying to, you know, they were trying to create struts to bridge the two the level difference of the bridges, and then obviously the McLeod sword can cut through like really thick chain, but Ramirez's sword can't cut through rope. So
I'm glad you mentioned the Hunter's tanks. That's another thing that I do like about this series is the look on those tanks. I think those are really cool.
And they
get
better.
Yeah. Yes. Last note on this interesting idea: the Ark sailing for the Promised Land. Free from Corton's dominion. Yep. So yeah, that was kind of a cool thing that we saw here. That was their end game here, to do this. And they achieved it. And I thought that was really cool. And they freed some slaves as well.
I hope sometime when we're done with this, because we have 30 episodes to go, or maybe 31, or 29, because we did, you know, more than one, plus one on this episode, that we see these characters return, or we get to see the fruits of their labor, you know, like all of these civilizations, these pockets of civilizations starting to actually rise up against Cortan, and eventually they're going to become the saviors of the world again.
Well, it's obvious that they're doing this. They're not just making these standalone episodes. They're building this world building here. They're building the story of Quentin and his evolvement. And I'm starting to see that, which I do like. We didn't really catch that in the first four episodes.
Right.
But now they're really starting to lay the groundwork. So that's pretty cool. The next episode is episode 8, The History Lesson. And I'm going to go ahead and let you read this one again so I can cover the last one that you did not read. So go ahead and hit this one.
Okay, so Quentin cannot understand the importance of knowing the past. Ramirez takes him to the city governed by Lancerlei, the history jeditor. Cortan predicts this move and sends Arrak to attack the fortressed city. Lancerlei feels the buzz and assumes it is Cortan, but is relieved to find that it is Ramirez and the prophesized Highlander. As Arrak tries to break into the gates, Lancerlei gives Quentin his quickening, which incapacitates the attacking army.
This was really cool because I think this was the episode that I alluded to earlier where you find out that Cortan has done what he can in the past to erase anything that anyone can use to fight against him. How to take care of yourself, how to make weapons, how to, you know, anything that he can use to quell an uprising mm-hmm. of some sort. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's this Lancerlei that mentioned this, I think, if I remember correctly.
And this is that episode. The moral of the story of this episode is that he who does not understand history is doomed to repeat it. That's the moral of the story, yeah. right? Because
yep.
the whole point of what Ramirez is doing at the beginning of this episode, he's trying to tell Quentin that you have to understand the history of where you come from or where we came from as immortals. And then you have to understand the history of why we created the Jeditors and why we are trying to survive in order to pass along our knowledge to you. We're waiting for you to earn that.
Yeah, I actually wrote these notes down. It's explained that Cortan uses his powers to wipe the history from men and women to control them easier. And as you alluded to, quote, Ramirez says, to understand where he is going, man must understand where he has been. Mm-hmm. The knowledge is now with Quentin. And this is very interesting because this is where, as you mentioned here in the notes, Quentin seems that he's actually progressing in his training until the Spanish surprise, which is another lesson that Ramirez adds to Quentin's skill set.
Yeah, that
one of those little moves.
It's like the Miyagi thing, right? Where
yes.
this is like yeah. sooner or later, he's going to Daniel-san him. And then, you know, he's like, paint the fence. And then all of a sudden, Daniel, out of nowhere, starts blocking stuff.
I started thinking about that scene in Highlander 3, that little kind of like turnaround move that
yep.
Connor does against one of the...
What he learned from the sorcerer Nakano?
Yes. Oh, we're not done
no.
with that yet. I want to touch on this, too, that you liked Lancerlei's design. It reminds you of a futuristic crusader. Mm-hmm. And based on his name, he definitely sounds like he were in the time of King Arthur and Camelot. And you're totally right, because I remember watching King Arthur, the John Borman film, for the first time over the last several months
okay.
ago. And then, of course, watching the new King Arthur film. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're right. He totally had that cool look going down.
And it's neat because Lancerlei is now another Jeditor who has a specific ability, right?
Yeah.
So we had Olak before, who was the Jeditor of wind. And now you have Lancerlei, who is the Jeditor of history. Right? You don't have, like, the Jeditors don't have these amalgamations of all these different talents. They have specific talents. Right?
Dude, what would you be the Jeditor of? What would Norm be the Jeditor of?
I would
of?
Be the Jeditor of single malts.
I would be the Jeditor of hair metal.
Yes.
Now, one thing we need to touch on here is Lancerlei's psychic connection with Quentin.
Mm-hmm.
Is this part of the quickening? I didn't quite get that, so explain.
So in this episode, you saw him kind of reach out. And then this is where I was like, okay, are the jewels the sign of the buzz? Or when they started getting into proximity of the monastery where Lancerlei was kind of like this lord over, where they started to feel that headache, that kind of that ringing in their
right.
ears. And then Ramirez kind of played it off. It's like, oh, that was just a bug in my ear. You know?
Yeah.
But I don't know if Lancerlei was reaching out and stretching out with his quickening or if it was just a... some type of reference to what we're used to in Highlander. When two immortals are yeah. in proximity of each other, they kind of feel ill.
You got a lot of good notes here, and I'll make sure we touch on this. You like the idea of the monastery mm-hmm. being a fortress that protects the collection of artifacts and relics from the man's past.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Yep. Yep.
Great siege attack sequence. Also nice to see even more design motifs for the hunters, including the battle tanks and new armor designs and even a battering ram. Dude, that was pretty
cool. I like that. And it's kind of neat that now they have these half helmets for some of the hunters so that because if you don't have any of your face showing, you don't really have a personality. But as soon as you do that half helmet and you can see their mouths moving, they seem to be a little bit more human and not very so stormtrooperish.
Yeah. Yeah. There's certain things about this series that I'm warming up to, and especially the story developing here. I'm really kind of digging this. This is the same thing. I had a question about this too, and I'm glad you brought it up. Lancelet's quickening used to repel the invading army. Mm-hmm. Does this mean that he passed on his essence? Yeah, that was, it was kind of like as they're doing this peaceful, knowledge quickening, boom, it lays waste to his, to, the tanks that are invading.
Right. But I thought it was kind of interesting too, because not too long ago when we did the commentary on Shadows, we kind of poked fun that don't do a quickening inside somewhere that has a lot of valuable stuff.
Yeah, it's just true.
Because in some cases when we're seeing...
Not in your apartment,
you know,
bro.
Don't do it in your apartment. Don't do it in a in the Crystal Factory, you know, there on, you know, on Beach Boulevard, like right across from Buena Park, you know, which is just full of crystal design. You know, don't do it in somewhere. Do it outside in a park.
Don't do it in a comic shop.
Exactly.
You
don't
know,
do it in Sideshow Collectibles. Don't do it there in their warehouse. But you know, when all kidding aside, you know, when he did this, you know, like you're basically in this repository for all of these antiquities that you've been protecting for centuries, and now all of a sudden your quickening is destroying the army that's outside, but also kind of like whipping around old fossils. You know, like a T-Rex fossil starts flying around there, and it's like, no, you don't do that. Don't be like that.
The only place I would recommend an indoor quickening would be a fireworks superstore.
That would be amazing. Kind of like at the end of like one of the Police Squad movies, the Naked Gun. He's like, back off. Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's. The remaining immortals have survived. You said here they've survived 700 years in order to pass on their historical knowledge of technology and culture to the Chosen One, the Highlander Quentin McLeod, so that he can bring mankind out of darkness and back on track before Corten ruled over the world. Mm-hmm. This is pretty much what we're getting out of this. That this is the main, I guess, plot for the entire series, would you
say?
Well,
for me, because this was...
At least so far, what we've
seen. This is the last of the four episodes that I covered in order from my DVD collection. And one of the things that I really wanted to touch on is that I think this is the best episode of the four that I covered. Even though that Connor McLeod's death is probably the most significant event in all of those four episodes, for me, like looking at the big picture, this is kind of what I think this whole story is about, that Quentin is learning and being protected by Ramirez in order for him to get from Jettator to Jettator and get their quickening, earn their quickening, and become a more powerful champion. So eventually, he will be able to actually stand toe-to-toe against Kortan, thwart Kortan, and then, I don't know, when he fills himself with all of the quickenings, what does he do with them? Does he give all that up for the betterment of humanity? So it'll be interesting. I know that it's going to be a long road to get to the end of this, and I actually am interested in getting to the end of this because I would like to know... Oh, come on. Turn that frown upside down, bro.
Oh, okay. Little parts, little bits.
Exactly.
At a time.
Little bits little at bits a time. But, you know, I have a question to ask you after the end of this. So I'm going to save kind of like where I'm going with this until the end.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, the episode that I covered that you did not.
By the way, I just want to say that Kevin basically like just thumped his forehead to his mic when I said, hey, let's see more of this. Thud.
Oh, man. Okay. So the episode that I covered is called The Cursed, and this is the one on that was actually, I guess, this was the one that was towards after the history lesson that you thought history lesson was the last episode, but yeah. I covered The Cursed. And this episode opens again with the training lessons between Ramirez and Quentin, with Clyde and Gall looking on, with Ramirez insisting he concentrate more and not trying, but wanting to succeed. A kind of do or do not, there is no try. A Dundee clansman named Neil comes across their path and insists that the Dundees are dying by mysterious disease. He tells him his story. While they were crossing a strange forest, one after another caught the illness. Only a few managed to not get sick, but they couldn't go farther. They are stopped by a rival clansman. A one-armed man named Scott, chief of his clan of Tarmos, insisted that they are cursed. He ordered them to leave, but Neil insists that they cannot and are too weak to move on. Chieftain Scott claims they are sorcerers. They are sorcerers who have carried the plague that may infect their own clan. Neil says that they will leave as soon as they're sick and walk, but Chieftain Scott insists that they stay and that each of them will die and the gods will leave the Tarmos alone. Dundee clansman Neil requests the help of Ramirez and Quentin to help fight this disease. Meanwhile, Quentin is upset that Arrak has failed to find the Highlander. He now assigns, what's that guy's name again?
Askelios.
Askelios as head of research to take control of Arrak's men to find the Highlander. Ramirez and Quentin find that Tarmos clan, as they are burying their dead from this disease. Ramirez insists that the Dundee clan fight is not with their fellow clan, the Tarmos, but against the illness. Ramirez then realizes this disease is an old sickness called malaria, an illness carried by mosquitoes. Ramirez insists that he and Quentin find the Jeditor Ulrich, the Jeditor of Medicine. Chieftain Scott refuses to let Clyde and the Dundees drink water from their well because he thinks they carry the disease and insists that they are still sorcerers. But Quentin insists he is the Highlander, and both clans are infected and are dying from the same sickness. Chieftain Scott is intrigued by learning who Highlander Quentin is and leaves immediately with an idea. Clyde then becomes sick. Oh, no. Askelios figures out where Quentin is and orders Arrak and to the marshlands to capture the Highlander. Meanwhile, Clyde and Gall discover a hunter's uniform hidden in a secret trapdoor under a rug in the Chieftain Scott's Tarmos clan hut. Clyde tells of her discovery to Dundee clansman Neil. Quentin and Ramirez find the Jeditor Ulrich and the Jeditor of Medicine. Tarmos clan Chieftain Scott finds his way to Arrak and claims himself as a former hunter discharged due to injury. He tells Arrak the Highlander is heading to the Six Cliffs to find Ulrich. Arrak gathers his forces and pursues them. Quentin and the Jeditor Ulrich, the Jeditor of Medicine, perform the knowledge quickening, so Quentin can have his power and knowledge of medicine and healing. Quentin makes a healing medicine and puts it in a bottle, but then they are captured by the hunters and Chieftain Scott. Chieftain Scott, who is now sick, Quentin claims he can heal him and the rest of them. Dundee clansmen attack their convoy and free them. Later, Askelios and Arrak argue over Arrak's failing plan to act on his own as Quentin and Malone look on. Malone questions their incompetence and Quentin's lack of punishment, but Quentin insists that he still has use for these subordinates. Back at the clan Tarmos, Clyde and Scott, chieftain of Clan Tarmos, have received the medicine and are feeling better. Scott questions Quentin's reasoning for saving him after he betrayed Quentin. Quentin then says, saving lives is more important than revenge. After Scott gets the medicine, he gives Quentin the keys to the water well. Scott then says, you're right, McLeod. Saving lives is more important. So here we go. We have a mention of sorcerers.
And are you sure they're not illusionists?
Oh, we're just going to keep going on and on. But back to the story. So here we have another Jeditor, Jeditor of Medicine.
Okay, so we have the Jeditor of Wind and the Jeditor of History and now the Jeditor of Medicine.
When are we going to have the Jeditor of Fire, the Jeditor of Dirt, and then we're going to have the Fifth Element Jeditor?
The Jeditor... The multi-pass Jeditor.
Nice. Okay, so a couple of notes here. Clyde gets hurt again. She gets sick.
Poor Clyde.
And then again, this is the... So what we're getting is these peaceful knowledge quickenings. Mm-hmm. This is what we see Quentin doing here to gain more power and knowledge for the bigger picture, which eventually he will then take on... take on Quentin. Yep. Now, one thing that I noticed, the hunters and the other bad guys have these numbers on their uniforms. This is interesting. What did you think of
badge
that?
Badge codes or units, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, which I thought was interesting. And I think that also, was it Chieftain Scott mentions that to the other guy when he's giving them the information on the Highlander.
Malone?
You know, saying not Malone. I'm forgetting
Eric?
His name. The second. Eric. Yeah. Giving the information, saying I'm a former hunter, but I was discharged due to injury, and he shows that he lost his arm, but he gives a numeric number, which I thought was interesting. So, but I thought that was kind of a cool thing that they have these. Even the hunters have these designated numbers on them, and some other people had some part of Cortan's army also had some different numbers. So I thought that was interesting.
I love the hunter. I really do. I think they're some of the coolest designs in the animated series. I think they're really neat.
That would make a good costume, actually.
Yeah. I know you didn't like them at the start.
Not at first, but they grew on me. They really did. Yeah. Okay, so what is your take on this story,
First of all, great synopsis. I thought that was fantastic. And I didn't watch this, but because your synopsis was so thorough, I felt like I did. Because I've seen enough of the animated series to project what you're reading into the characters and the style and kind of like where they would be. And this is interesting that malaria has come back, because in our modern time, we have all of the antidotes. We have all of the vaccinations against polio and diphtheria and malaria and all the major diseases that at one point in time, they really ravaged humanity. And now we're back to that. So it's neat to see that something like this can actually return again if there weren't proper medicines to fight these diseases.
Yeah. And this is where if you look past the animation, which has been something we've kind of harped on, when you look back on the story itself and how it's starting to develop, I got to admit, it's actually getting interesting. It's weird that we're not getting your normal beheading quickenings, but we're getting this more of this peaceful thing. But I see why it was done, but they're kind of making it work for me a little bit here. How these Jedators, they want to. It kind of reminds me of that one scene where Hugh Fitzcairn's about to get his head chopped off by the hunters. Mm-hmm. He's like, "No, wait, who's going to get my quickening?"
Right.
You know, these Jedators are waiting for someone worthy, and we're seeing them transfer their knowledge and their quickening through a peaceful quickening and knowledge quickening, as I'm coining it here. Hashtag knowledge quickening.
Hashtag knowledge quickening. There you go.
Yeah. And I think this is interesting. I still can't get over the look of Malone here. This jester for Cortan that wears these bells on his arms.
He is goofy. Yeah.
But also, too, the other thing that I find funny is whenever they go to Cortan's keep or castle.
Maganda,
mm-hmm. Yeah. This that big green castle thing, and then you always see him sitting at the top of his throne with these stairs that are like about 50 to 100 feet below him, and he's just up there by himself with Malone. I'm like, who does that? I mean, if I'm like ruler of my own domain here, I'm not gonna go like 50 feet up to a chair and just sit up there and contemplate on things and stuff.
I know, it's a weird trope with villains, right?
You know, I'm going to be sitting on a comfy couch, maybe with Netflix going on in the background, and then kind of checking in with my lieutenants. You know, hey, how's that Highlander search going?
I just think, because someone has to go, it's like,
get me an ice cream.
Oh, I got to walk 50 stairs to get him an ice cream. That's terrible.
I get it. It's your typical bad guy trope thing going on.
So you didn't have to walk that many stairs to actually see the Emperor, right? Because that wasn't that many stairs.
No, you went up an elevator, you walked past a couple Imperial guards, you walked across the hall, up maybe about 6 or 7 steps, there he was, looking out
a
window.
Right? Yeah, you're good.
All right, Norm, let's go into the final thoughts here. Let's get some thoughts for you on these 5 episodes. Not 4, but 5. And also, too, we have different DVD sets.
Yes, that's true.
Reminder.
That's true. But for the most part, It's interesting seeing this now from being exposed to it now for now a total of 9 episodes, right? And I have to be honest, it is growing on me. I'm not the biggest fan of the quality of the animation, but I do remember that when I was, you know, living in the 90s, that American animation, it wasn't state of the art. as far as I'm concerned. But it does tell a good story if you pay attention to it. And I'm probably going to say a thing that's kind of like wildly unpopular right now, but you got to be open-minded when you come to something like this as any kind of fan. If you're a Highlander fan, if you're a fan of something else, imagine like if as Star Trek fans watching the Star Trek animated series that came like back in like, I was like 1971 or 72, you know, and the animation wasn't so great. That was like the old Filmation animation. And people are like, this is terrible. This isn't Star Trek. But when you actually watch those episodes, they're very Star Trek. So in this case, I think it's neat that they're not falling to the violent kind of natural conclusion of a Highlander episode. You know, it's like, oh, let's fight and there's going to be a beheading, there's going to be a quickening, there's going to be an explosion, and all you're said and done, everything, all is good. I think it's neat that they're actually trying to find ways around that with these peaceful quickenings and the reason why that they're trying to empower Quentin McLeod. So I'm not saying that this is my favorite cartoon in the world, but I am saying that if you actually give it a chance, there's some really interesting storytelling going on. And if you're a Highlander fan, I think it's worth your time to at least experience this once. I don't think that you and I are ever going to go back to these episodes and watch them again, but at least we can move forward and say, like, you know what? Let's see how the story pans out.
I can hear the thoughts of several of our listeners going, yeah, I'm good. I'm just going to wait for Blood of Kings to cover it.
And that's why we're here, folks. We're here for you. We suffer for our fans.
And you say, you know, like, we're not going to go back and watch these. Like, no, I'd rather go back and listen to our episodes covering
these. Well, totally. We're way more entertaining than the actual show.
What I thought was interesting, that the episode that had Connor's kind of death, mm-hmm. even though it was not really seen but implied, in the episode that I didn't watch, which was the Sound of Madness, mm-hmm. It was interesting that Connor had red hair, mm-hmm. like Quentin does. I was wondering why they went with that. It's kind of
I think they had to do the the spiritual connection from Connor to Quentin. Yeah.
I echo what you say, Norm. It's one of those things where, yeah, I like to poke fun at it, and you know, and the idea of watching more, I'm kind of like going, eh. But now I there's a part of me that kind of wants to see where the story develops and where it goes. yeah, but what's interesting is the first four that we did didn't really do that.
No,
for
I agree. Yeah,
and it's kind of something that we see, and it's funny. We touched on it on a recent episode, past episode of Culture Clash, when we talked about our top eight canceled too soon TV series, mm-hmm. and. I remember there was Caprica. It was one of yours. And I was kind of giving it some crap because after two episodes, I was done. And you said I should have given it more time. And that's a good example. That was good advice. You know, after two episodes, if a show's not going where you want, you know, do you still give it a chance? You know, and a lot of people say you got to give a full season a chance or something before it really starts to develop. It's harder to do that nowadays with so much television out there that seems so good that if you don't get something from it in the first couple of episodes, why move on? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I thought that kind of came up what you said when I was going over these episodes again today was, you know, the first four of these episodes didn't really kind of grab me. But now I kind of see what they're doing with it. And it does.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's like a book. Rarely, yeah. if ever, are you sold in the first chapter or two of a book. You know, it takes a little time to build up some steam.
All right. So let's go ahead and start to wrap this up. Let's go on Kevin's Immortal Quickening scale here. And I feel that we need to mention some names here. Starting at number one, we got Katana and Richie's Jacket. Number two, we have Michael Christian.
Yes.
Paired up with Duncan's 1964 Black Thunderbird.
Okay.
And number three, we have the Immortal Chimoli in Richie Season 2.
I might even caveat Richie Season 2 and replace him with an iron pipe.
Think about that. Okay. All right. I will think about that. Number four, we got Canis and Anthony Galen, played by Roddy mm-hmm. Piper. Five, we got Luther and Hugh Fitzcairn. Mm-hmm. Six, we got Xavier and Amanda. Mm-hmm. Seven, we got Connor and Kurgan. Eight, we've got Duncan and Kierdwin. 9, we've got Darius. 10, we've got Mythos. And 11, we've got all four horsemen.
All four.
Scale of 1 to 10, Norm. Where do you put these five episodes that we covered?
I am going to give this a very solid Luther and Hugh Fitzcairn.
Number five, right,
right
in the middle.
In the middle. Because, okay, to be quite honest with you, I actually found some of the storytelling in these episodes more entertaining than some of the episodes that I watched in season one of Highlander. As seen in our Skip It or See It episodes.
You know, that's a good point, because you're right. There is a few of these I would rather watch over a few of those.
Just in terms of what I
learned. Yeah, no, that's a good point. How, yeah. Especially that episode of the history.
I really
list,
like that one.
Which you liked. Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Do you ever do this? I want to ask you this before you grade this. Do you ever watch these and kind of overlay an actual real life design on top of these, like movie production or TV production? Because think about it. Like,
give me an example.
Okay, so when we walk into the monastery, okay, that, now think of the episode Avenging Angel where Alfred Cahill walks into the Knights Templar museum. That's kind of like what I'm thinking of when they walk into the monastery. And like Lancerlei is like think about of an act, like an actor who would like really be good in that role. Like say, oh, I don't know, Tim Thomerson, or, you know, someone in that, like let's take like the
Tim Thomerson from Trancers.
That's right.
Nice.
Trancers and Dollman. But, you know, he isn't.
Whoa.
Right. So he's one of those actors that he kind of falls into that category. It's like, okay, we're going to get an actor for this Highlander show. You know, we have this set. He's going to be our Lancerlei. You know, you got to have all these other actors playing the main characters. But sometimes I do that. Sometimes I'll take that story and I'm like, what would this be like live action? And does it work?
Yeah.
Does the story work both ways?
It's funny. When you talked about that monastery, it reminded me of some places I visited last July when I went to Ireland and Scotland, in England and stuff. When it comes to this particular series, I haven't really put much thought into translating it to live action. Because honestly, I don't want to see a live action version of Highlander 700 years in the future.
You don't?
I don't.
Oh, I do.
Because I think the reason why is because I think it was best done with the Highlander Search for Vengeance, done the best way, where it goes beyond into the future. And I really like the way that did it a little bit better. My Highlander, I'd rather keep around current time. Just my personal opinion. You know, maybe a live. Yeah, I don't know.
That's a good topic.
That's a good topic. I have to think about that more. Maybe like a good Highlander offshoot movie in the future with completely different characters, but with immortals and quickenings and stuff. You know, that might be kind of fun. Yeah. Loosely based on this. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe
we
should save this for a supplemental episode.
Yeah.
Something
I like
a little kind of like jazzy, a little freeform, a little non-scripted.
I like that. Okay. As for where I put these five episodes on Kevin's Immortal Quickening scale, I'm going to give it I'm not going to go middle of the road just yet. I probably would have put it lower for the first few episodes that we did, but I'm going to give this kind of a Canis and Anthony Galen number four. Okay. Right now, but with the hopes of pushing it up to Luther and Fitz, just because I kind of like where the story's going, but I want to see what the next several episodes kind of do before we jump into it. So I'm gonna say this for the record that we will definitely cover these again, assuming that we get some feedback on these that they do want to see more. So let us know if you want to see us cover more of these animated series so you don't have to. Let us know.
Well said.
Norman, do we have any special thanks to give?
Do we have any special thanks to give?
I do. Yeah. I just want to thank everyone on Blood of Kings again. Mm-hmm. We've gotten some new members sharing some new pictures and stories. And I just want to say thank you again. I love going on the Blood of Kings thing. And, you know, I remember as we mentioned in our previous episode, the 40th episode, which was our 1 year anniversary, I remember you helping to launch that, Norm. And it's so funny to see where we were a year ago compared to where we are now. And I just want to say thank you for all of the listeners, new listeners too, Thank you for listening to us, and please let us know what you think of these episodes on Blood of Kings.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely, and you know what? If you are going to the 25th anniversary convention this October in Los Angeles, let us know. Stay in touch with us, and yeah, we definitely want to meet everybody there and have a good time with you, because you know, we don't get a chance to actually talk and message and respond to every single person that's on the Blood of Kings Facebook fan page. So make sure that you get in touch with us while you're there. Say hi. Connect with us. That's what community building is all about.
Agreed. Agreed. Good point, Norm. Well, it's been fun talking about this animated series again, man. And I hope our listeners like this as much as they did the last one. But we should let our listeners know that we have a lot of other cool programming on the Fandom Podcast Network. Well, on Blood of Kings, we recently talked about our one-year anniversary. We also did some other cool episodes, so make sure you go back and check that out. We also have a brand new podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. It's our Alfred Hitchcock podcast called Good Evening, hosted by Tom Caldwell, Brandon Shea Mutala, and Chris Haig. And you know Brandon from Trek FM, right?
I do. Brandon's a fantastic podcaster. I actually didn't know that he was this big of an Alfred Hitchcock fan. So I want to hear him do Alfred Hitchcock, like an opening, like, good evening.
And you know what? I've listened to the episodes they have out. And what I really like about these guys is not only do they love Alfred Hitchcock, but they got some serious movie knowledge, which I love when people know their movie knowledge. And looking forward to seeing if they can come on some future episodes of some other programming.
Or vice versa, if you can jump onto Good Evening, you know, bring your movie knowledge to them.
Yeah. we've got...
Wait a second. I just came up with an idea.
What? Sorry, go ahead.
Your quickening would be movie knowledge. I'm sorry.
That is such useless information, but hey, you know what? I'm sure Jedidors get bored and they just want to start talking about something, and then that, you know, Quentin can just go, hey, you know what I know? Mm-hmm. I know what happened in 1987 with all the movies that came out
that year. That's
right. Which is what I'm going to talk about coming up very shortly. We're about to record the first episode of 1987, the movies. And by this time this episode airs, it should be out by then. So, yeah, really excited about that. Culture Clash is the weekly fandom show that both Kyle and I co-host. And sometimes we get some other guys to come on and guest. I know, Norm, you came on. We talked about a couple weeks ago. We talked about Star Trek. We did Trek in 10, but we kind of expanded it. That was fun. And we're looking to have you on for more stuff, too. But I know you're excited about the new Trek Discovery like I am. So that's really cool. I'm really excited about that. Also, we have Couch Potato Theater, those movies that you just watch on when they come up on TV, and you may have that DVD or Blu-ray sitting on your shelf, but you just end up watching it. And Davis Grayson hosted Planet of the Apes, and then I joined him for G.I. Joe, the animated movie, too. So look for those.
Now, this was the original classic Planet of the Apes. Let's be very clear about this.
Apes with clothes.
Apes with clothes. The whole, at the end, Charlton Heston pounds his fist into the sand and he goes, "You maniacs! You blew it up! Oh, damn you all to hell!" Pulls back and he's...
God, those movies still hold up too, because, man, those apes are scary.
Let me tell you, it's one of the greatest reveals at the end of any movie ever.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah.
And it's like, gosh. Oh my gosh, he's in New York this entire time. Right?
Yeah, that's like an I Am Your Father moment right there.
Yeah, unbelievable.
You know, before I Am Your Father.
Exactly, yeah.
Norm, any final thoughts real quick?
This was a lot of fun. Reviewing the animated series is actually, sometimes I'm like, oh, are we really going to do this? You know, what are we going to get out of it? Right? But our motto here.
Been asking myself all week
our motto here on Blood of Kings is that we review and discuss all things Highlander. This is no exception. And funny enough, at the end of all of this, we actually had a very good time experiencing this, at least the one time that we're probably going to do this, talking about it, and actually finding some really interesting kernels of information to actually dive into and dig into.
Completely agree.
Right? So it's a nice surprise. It's on something that we aren't generally kind of usually super excited about. It's not like, oh, what are we doing this week, Gnome? Dude, we're totally going to be talking about like Mythos as an immortal. Oh, yeah, let's do that. Versus, what are we doing this week, Norm? The next four episodes of Highlander the Animated Series. Really?
We have people probably thinking that right now. Like, why aren't you bringing a Mythos
out? We will.
But
Mythos, it's so easy because Mythos has been talked about to death, but this one hasn't. This Highlander the Animated Series hasn't.
We're making you wait for
that's
Mythos.
Right.
That's what
we are priming the pump. We are teasing the information. Yeah.
I mean, think about it. If you're listening to our yapping voices right now, a year ago, did you think, oh, I really want to know more about the Highlander Animated Series?
And now we have two episodes dedicated to it.
That's right. Well, I'm really excited to hear about the feedback for the show, and please let us know. Norman, thank you again for joining me this week on Blood of Kings. As always, it's always good to talk Highlander with you. I always get that little kind of pre-show adrenaline rush that I like because I love talking Highlander with you. Well,
It's my non-violent way of giving my quickening to you.
Well said, sir. I'm Kevin, and on behalf of my co-host Norman, thanks everyone for listening, and join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Norm, that sensation you feeling is the knowledge quickening. It's so peaceful, and our sword might break.
The movie quickening. I can feel all the movie knowledge rushing into me.
And hair metal knowledge. There we go. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.